It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning, Jill. Good morning, Marshall.
Good morning.
Or, as I would be like...
Wet morning.
What's so good about it?
It's a lot of rain.
Yeah, there's a lot of rain. I was thinking about, what we expect from people starting at about 4:30 this morning when I went to war, or attempted to, with Bank of America again. And I just thought, how do you, when you're taking care of people's animals and doing all sorts of things, how do you get yourself into a state where you can just push all of that out of the way and help them? And I think it's pretty laudable.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I have an excellent manager. I have lots of good help to do my fighting with Bank of America.
Okay, but it's it's just getting yourself into a position where you can take someone else who is, let's just say focused on Fluffy, because in a lot of cases when Fluffy gets to you, there's a reason for it. It's not just a wellness check.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to be in a position where you can deal with them being fatutzed, takes a lot, because
it takes some focus.
Yeah, it's a real ability, and I think that I don't think people make enough of it. So,
well, I appreciate your making something of it. Thank you.
You are welcome.
It'll be a good day for me today.
And speaking of which, Mark in Newburgh, I wormed my dog with veterinary strength dewormer 2 weeks ago, and now she keeps licking her nether region like it's bothering her. Usually that's a sign of worms, but they should be over by now, right? Should I give her another dose? I should mention that she had her anal glands expressed last month, so I wouldn't think that was the problem.
So the couple of things here, that's a good question. Dogs will be irritated around the anus from certain types of parasites. Usually, vast majority of the time, it is a tapeworm. And so tapeworms show themselves pretty well. So if they're causing irritation, then it is because the small pieces of the tapeworms will detach from the long worm. So people may have seen pictures of them. They're in sections, so little half-inch sections or so. When they're alive, they dry up to small little yellowish, what we call pieces of rice. So they look like they're, they can be sort of a short grain rice type of thing, and they dry up and they attach to the hair around the perineum, or the area underneath of the tail. They're called proglottids, so these little sections actually carry the eggs. They break off in the intestine and come out through the anus, and so they're crawling out and they're causing some irritation. And if you're not seeing them there, so if you can sort of examine that area, and if you're not seeing any suspicious pieces of tapeworm there, then it may not be a tapeworm problem. Tapeworms' irritation around the anus can cause dogs to scoot their bums on the floor or to lick excessively. Number two, sometimes it's not around the anus, and sometimes it's the vulva that they're licking. So you have to kind of pay attention and make sure that you've got the right area. If a female dog has a urinary tract infection, they'll lick themselves around the vulva as well, or instead. So the dewormer, if you're targeting tapeworm, then you need a dewormer that has praziquantel in it. And so not very many of the over-the-counter. So it was mentioned that this is a veterinary strength dewormer. But
right,
I'm not
but
sure
who,
if it was,
who knows whether it came from a veterinarian.
Yeah, so marketing tool. That's a great marketing tool for people to put things at Petco and Tractor Supplies, veterinary strength. So it really needs to have the right drug in it in order to combat tapeworms. You can kill the tapeworm with one dose of praziquantel. Now, there can be reinfection. So they're getting your dog. If your dog's got tapeworms, they either have a flea, fleas as an intermediate host, or they're eating rodents. So if there's no sign of your dog or no way that your dog's eating rodents, then likely they have fleas. So that's, again, a secondary thing that needs to be addressed. The flea carries the tapeworm eggs inside right. of it.
So
that's all interesting stuff.
So I guess, and you know, and again, looking for the shortest distance between two points, just in efficiency in managing dogs, kids, life, cats, whatever. You don't really know. It's not necessarily as simple as marketed. So you know what I would say if Mark were my friend. I'd say, hey, Mark, you got to check. It's worth the vet visit to find out what area you're really dealing with.
Yes, or at least a phone call. If your veterinarian knows your dog well, might say to bring in a stool sample first. Now, the difficulty with that is we frequently don't catch tapeworms in eggs in the stool because right. they're passed in a different way in those little proglottids.
So, but all you have to do is really look at, I'm just sorry.
Yeah, but the anal gland thing is a big issue. So if you yeah. have a dog who's looking in that area, an anal gland infection is not that uncommon. And it can get, the one gland will get really large, and then sometimes it blows right out through the skin, and then you have a hole in the skin with draining pus out of the anal gland. So it's something that even though, especially if your dog has to be checked for full anal glands.
If they were expressed, then you want to really, a lot of things add up. It's kind of like, you know, there are so many little elements in what looks like a very simple question. That
yes,
I think
sure.
that the point is, you know, very not necessarily single factor causation here, and therefore check with the vet. But because starting with the veterinary strength dewormer, which doesn't sounds as you said like a marketing tool, and then moving on to the fact that it could be tapeworm, but the dog's had her anal glands expressed recently. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, so there could be an anal gland problem. There also can be an food allergy issue. So lots of things potential happening
there.
One
thing you can answer for sure is, should I give her another dose? No.
I don't think it's worth it, no.
Unless
you're seeing a lot of fleas, then go ahead and address the fleas and give another dose only if it's got praziquantel.
Right, and you've addressed the fleas, because otherwise you're in a what's that called? The opposite, a vicious circle.
Right.
Okay, you ready for some bunnies?
Sure.
Okay, Walton, Terry, and Middleton. We've got a house rabbit, and we were planning on getting a puppy this fall. Someone told us though that if a puppy nips a bunny while they're playing, their spit has toxic properties that can kill the bunny, even if the bite isn't serious. Rabbit rescue information online tends to focus on worst-case scenarios, so I want to ask an actual vet if we have to put a kibosh on the puppy plan.
That's an interesting question. I know that there are lots of people who have rabbits with their dogs, and there's not a toxic... As far as I know, there isn't anything toxic about dogs' saliva to rabbits tearing the skin. For especially a puppy with sharp teeth, rabbit skin is rippable, and that can be a problem. If those little teeth puncture into the muscle, you can end up with abscesses, and abscesses are, of course, all animals have bacteria in their mouths, so these abscesses can be really difficult to address in a rabbit, and can also the toxins from the bacteria, once they get an infection, can possibly be toxic. I think that's maybe what they're talking about here. I mean, it's a similar situation with cat bites to people. You know, their bacterial toxins, once you get an infection from a cat bite, can be pretty nasty to the tissue around the bite, so you get a huge swelling, etc. But there's nothing that I'm aware of as far as dogs and rabbits go that is not necessarily compatible, except that rabbits are prey animals and dogs are predators. So if they're raised together, they can do fine, especially if you have a good-sized rabbit.
Right.
So, but with a puppy, sorry to interrupt you, but with a puppy with any, of course, with a puppy with any other animal, there has to be you've got to supervise, because they don't understand that something is smaller, that they can hurt something, and that goes with other dogs as well.
No, that's all I was going to interrupt to say is, you know, it's a puppy anyway. So as long as there's not immediate, like, oh no, as long as the puppy doesn't come with like a little skull and crossbones poison label on it, because if it licks or touches the bunny's gonna be in difficulty. Then everything else presumes good supervision, boundaries,
management. Yeah.
But no reason not to get the bunny. I mean, no reason not to get the puppy. Sorry.
Right.
Or no toxic saliva reason not
to get. Exactly. The puppy will get into the litter box.
Right.
Oh. And eat the bunny's food and all those types of things.
So I asked a really good question there. There are a million reasons not to get a puppy, but none of them.
Yeah, so supervised play a couple of times a day probably would be appropriate, but not to ever leave them alone until your dog is quite a bit older.
Or ever.
Or ever.
Because that's the other thing I've discovered. And this is just a life experience. The minute that you leave, it doesn't have to have an unhappy ending, but it seems that the one time that I leave my perfectly good, you know, wouldn't misbehave at all old lady alone, you know, that's when the bee stings. That's when it's amazing. It's uncanny.
You can't count on their behavior with a predator prey relationship.
No, you just can't.
True. And we see that part of the problem is we see all these cutie videos on Facebook and so forth, and that there is definitely a situation where animals can get along that well, but it is somewhat misleading, because it's not frequently that situation where a dog will really be best friends, or a cat will be best friends with a rabbit.
Right.
Jill's not commenting. Jill, you're probably not on Facebook.
No. I think about this all the time, but I just, okay. Another outside life experience. We ordered something. Marshall ordered a computer, and we got four different packages from the place. Four. Like, instead of...
With the different parts of the computer?
Different parts at different times.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the sort
it's
of thing. But that's the sort of thing that makes people really. It's the product of seeing like a cute little bunny doggy video on Facebook and thinking, oh yeah, no reason why not. It's the product of seeing anything like that. We've actually talked about this before, about adverts on TV for different pet foods, where you see the vegetables going into the great kibble in the, you know, wonderful and the happy dog. And so, like, why wouldn't you think that this was a perfect thing to do? There's just, once it's on a screen, there's no reason, you don't think about all the tangibles. That's all.
Right.
And
they've got us over a barrel where that comes.
Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Hannah in Winstead, first-time dog owner and admitted major germaphobe here. Okay. My girlfriend and I were camping this weekend, and our puppy found and ate a fallen bird's nest. Don't ask me why. All I can think of is all kinds of bird mites, bird parasites, West Nile virus. I feel totally oogly now. What do we do? Pup is 5 months old and a boxer.
So that nest must have had something delicious in it, like bird poop or maybe a broken egg.
Yeah.
So there's nothing really to do. The bird mites are not going to live on your dog for any length of time. And the bird stool would be unlikely to cause any problems. Parasite-wise, and the chlamydia is the thing that birds can carry that would be of concern, but typically it is transmitted through aerosol, so that the organisms, they're a different kind of bacterial-type organism, and they come out in the feces. The feces will dry up, and you'll breathe it in, and so it is a potential problem with people who have lots and lots of birds. But for eating a wild bird's nest, as long as it's come through the other end and this puppy is pooping every day, really nothing to be concerned about.
And this is why, actually, you have or should have a veterinarian, because there are situations when, I believe I was once as unrelaxed, not quite as germophobic, but as unrelaxed, and someone said, oh, yeah, garbageitis, you'll be fine. Like, oh, okay.
And our dogs and us have many more organisms or germs in our gut than we have cells in our body. So you're living with them,
yeah.
You know. There's no way. If you want to get rid of them, then you're going to be dead. So we have to make some peace with the bacteria. Of course, there are lots of bacteria that aren't friendly, but for the most part.
Peace with bacteria. I see that as a platform in some sort of political. All right. Noah, peace with bacteria. Peace through bacteria.
That's right. You're expanding. Look at it as expanding the scope of your microbiome.
Well, yeah. And the other thing is, and this goes for a lot of kids who were born after, they're post-millennials, but in a lot of cases, their parents gave them way more antibiotics, speaking of germs, than
and they, antibacterial soap.
Yeah, then they should have. You know, I don't know how you retrofit resistance, but it's something to be aware of. I'm certain, most non-scientifically, but I'm still certain that a lot of the things that are being, a lot of the ailments that are being marketed to, and the allergies and the thises and the thats, have a lot to do with not having just
harmony with nature.
Harmony with nature and proper resistance. It's like, yeah, there are germs. You'll be fine. All right, Noah and Lisa in North Adams yesterday. Oh, speaking of bees. Yesterday, my 7-year-old cat Bomber got stung by a bee while he was taking a nap on the porch. It got him right in the entry part of his ear, and now it's swollen and red-looking. Can I give him a tiny bit of human-type antihistamine, or do I have to go to the vet for kitty antihistamine? Or should I just let the swelling go down by itself? I should say it definitely looks as though Bomber is hurting.
I bet that hurts.
Duh.
You can use Benadryl, so you want to make sure that Benadryl has no cold medicine in it. So just plain Benadryl. The active antihistamine, excuse me, is diphenhydramine, and you can give about, well, you know, if you sort of can guess what your cat weighs, it's a great thing to know actually what your cat weighs approximately. So pay attention when you go to the vet in case you ever need poison control. Then you can give about a milligram per pound. So if you've got a 10-pound cat, you could go ahead and give a half of a 25-milligram tablet, and you can do it every 8 to 12 hours. It won't, I don't know how much it'll help with the pain. Pain medicine in cats is a little tricky. So if your cat's very painful to the point where he or she is swiping at that ear and potentially going to cause self-inflicted damage, then a visit to the veterinarian is advised. If there's a little bit of swelling there and he's maybe shaking his head a little bit, try the Benadryl.
All right, and I'm going to just transfer that to our canine companions because you know, that's with Carly and her bee sting, for example, or the blind spaniel and her bee sting.
Mm-hmm.
is it the same rule of thumb for dogs as cats?
Yeah, it's safe for people to give a milligram per pound. So you want to be careful with certain animals who... So in a 7-year-old cat like Bomber, probably not a problem. You want to be careful if your animal's on... If your pet is on hypertension medication, which isn't very common, but you know, if they have high blood pressure, don't use antihistamines. If they have heart disease or glaucoma or COPD, don't use antihistamines. So you know, it's a good idea to have a regular veterinarian that you can call in these instances. If your cat seems otherwise very healthy, it's okay to, and it's, you know, after closing time, it should be absolutely fine to give one dose until you get them in the morning.
Right. And, you know, especially the good news is it really works for the swelling, and that swelling is kind of what, you know, can creep people out for getting the pain.
And can cause the pain, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some cold compress would be nice, too.
Okay. That's good to know. I'm trying to find... Do we have time for one more question? We've got time for one more question. Maybe two. All right. Mark in Bristol. I'm guessing the reason it's okay to give peanut butter to dogs is that peanuts are actually legumes. So does that mean you can give them other legumes? You never hear of anyone giving lentils to a dog. And what about peas? I've heard you shouldn't give them cooked peas. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, you know, everything in moderation. There are things that dogs that are toxic to dogs, and peas and lentils are not toxic to dogs. But you can give a little bit here and there, but I wouldn't use it as a regular basis for a diet because peas are very starchy. So fresh peas do have a little bit of protein in them, but they're very starchy, so I wouldn't give a lot. They are not toxic. Lentils, again, you don't want to give a lot of anything that's not the dog's food because you're taking away from the So in other words, if you're going to try to add protein to a dog's diet and do it in the form of lentils, not a great idea. So lentils are, if you wanted to give a little bit of flavor from the bottom of the pot of your homemade lentil soup, then it's not something that's toxic.
But why would you give peanut butter to dogs anyway?
To get them to eat their pills.
Okay.
That would be the only reason.
Okay,
you know?
it's not a diet thing, right? I mean, unless you want to see them do the animatronic talkie thing.
And peanuts are, you know, peanut butter is high in fat and it's high in sugar.
Right.
Most peanut butter. So the only reason to use it is to get a pill in, as far as I'm concerned, or to distract them.
Do you have a different, right, possibly in a Kong, which I've never understood because it would just get hair and talk about being germophobic. I just can't even visualize what a Kong would look like.
You can mix it so it's peanut butter flavored plain yogurt is what I've used it for.
But then you freeze it, right?
That's a lot of peanut butter filling a Kong.
Then you freeze it?
And then I freeze it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Freezing. That's the component, everybody. Listen to that. The freezing.
So that it takes some time to lick.
Yeah, because otherwise it's just going to just, again, be a household project.
Yeah, but peanut butter is a great thing. Dogs love peanut butter, and I use it with my puppies, my new puppies that come in. I put a little bit lining a cup, and if we need to distract a puppy, and we want them to be excited about coming in, and so we'll use, give them a little peanut butter. They get it all over their noses and make a big mess, but they're the happiest little critters.
What kind do you
while
use?
While we're giving them a vaccine.
What kind do you use?
Sometimes we just use Jif. It's got some...
Yeah, I was just going to say Jif. No.
I try to get the organic...
No, but Jif is... Listen, Jif is okay.
A tiny bit of it is okay.
Yeah. You know, and just remember, this is all, once again, in moderation. But I guess what I'm trying to say is you don't have to run to the, super-duper Whole Foods and get expressed peanuts that were hand-peeled by whatchamacallits.
No. If you're trying to, train your dog, your pup especially, a little bit of peanut butter, if you've got a helper, a little bit of peanut butter in the bottom of a cup so it's hard for them to reach while you're picking up their feet and fondling the feet and maybe clipping a toe here and there, that's a great idea.
It's a terrific idea, and I didn't even, I'm happy to learn about it now, but again, the important thing is, and I had this sort of tangential conversation about having a leash to hand in the because all of my leashes disappeared, and we were sort of joking because you need to have something to hand if you're trying to do something, and that's just all part of it. It's like, oh no, here, let me break up. I can't break up the dog fight because I've got to attach the easy walk. It's just you have got to be willing to just try little things. It's a very tangible, I guess, is.
Yes, it can be easy. It's just a matter of having someone take the time to show you and explain to you and how important it is in everything you do with your puppy for later on, in their confidence and in their veterinary visits and all their grooming. As they get older, you want to be able to keep those nails short so that they don't have trouble walking. I have I have a pet peeve about long toenails.
Yeah, and I have one pet that has... the longest toenail in the history of creation, which must be really peevish. Do we have time for one more question? One more question. Joan in Great Barrington, when a dog gets old, should it eat less fat, speaking of which, in its diet, even if he's still very active? My husband and I have a 15-year-old intact male Gordon Setter. I can say this. 15-year-old Gordon Setter named Champion, and he's not fat, but we do wonder.
So... the Gordon Setter is a beautiful, beautiful dog, and I don't think I've seen one in a couple of several years, actually. Have you seen a picture of one?
Yes, and they are. I think they are just glorious looking.
They're striking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so lovely that they have one who's lived to be 15. That's really cool. So high-fat diet, a high-fat content in the food is not a problem as you age, as long as you're tolerating it fine. So if this dog is active and normal weight and doesn't have chronic loose stool, no problem with digestion, then keeping the fat high in the food is absolutely fine. And actually, these good fats are needed to maintain a healthy brain. So that's a great question. And the only reason to reduce fat is if you've got an inactive, overweight, older dog, the most and is otherwise healthy, then you want to make sure that you're reducing carbohydrates and starches first, restricting, and then fats to a lesser degree.
Yeah, and given their lifespan, that really is it's a wonderful age for that dog. And I would just say, as a civilian, whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
That's true. But yeah, fat content. We all need fats for the health of our, especially for the health of our nervous systems and brains. And going on a restricted fat diet, typically, if you take out fat, there are three main ingredients: protein, fat, and carbohydrates. So if you're not increasing the protein and you're taking out the fat, then you're increasing the carbs, which is not the greatest method for keeping weight down if you're not reducing carbohydrates.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon. This has been most edifying.
Thank you.
This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.